Session number 13040.
Mr. Bungard, real four.
Right. We did encounter on the Asdic's submarines. And so my duty on that occasion would be on the depth charge throwers. Duties vary according to the situation that one is faced with. Most of the time, when things were reasonable, my job was always on the bridge. And I was surrounded with telephones. The bridge, of course, is wide open at the top. And I was in contact with all parts of the ship. And that was my position. Should we be fighting aircraft, I was on a Bofors gun, because I was responsible for the electric motors which controlled it. And this was a remarkable gun because it remained absolutely normal and level while the ship rolled. And so beneath it was a little cabin where there was electric motors and gyros which controlled this. The theory was good, the result was bad, because if you got on that gun and the ship was rolling, you felt seasick, because the gun was supposed to be still while the ship rolled round it. It was a most peculiar thing. However, that was my job there. There again, of course, if we were torpedoing, I'd be somewhere else. When we began to run out of depth charges. A pattern of five is two port, two starboard and one over the stern. So at that point we had to get some more up from the magazine. Now there was a great iron hatch on the upper deck which had to be opened and clamped back. I hadn't noticed it, but the ordinary seaman who clamped this thing back didn't clamp it back properly. And I was over the hatch with pulleys and so forth, bringing up depth charges from below, from the magazine, which went sort of two floors down, if you like, and bringing them up for us, for our use. And unfortunately, the ship rolled, the hatch came down, and it came down on my leg. And it was very heavy and very hard, especially with the ship rolling.
On your thigh?
On my thigh. And the pain was something awful. However, my shipmates got the hatch back up again and I carried on, which was a mistake. I even went on watch, standing on one leg. And the next day, I was in the high power room when the ship rolled again, and being on one leg, I lost my balance and I hit the buzz bar, which is the electrical buzz bar, which threw me down again onto the same leg. And by this time I was in so much pain I couldn't do anything and had to be helped out of that department and down to the sick bay. Round about this time, everything was going wrong as far as I could see. One of our turbines split, which means we only had one instead of two. One of the boiler rooms was shut down, one turbine cut out, and our speed was right down to about, 10 knots at the most. Hardly that. And we were a sitting duck. We couldn't keep up with the convoy. And the only thing we could do would be crawl back and hope that there was no trouble. We couldn't even use depth charges, because if we did, we'd blow our own stern off. So the ship slowly crawled back to Scotland. I was in the sick bay. Yes, my leg was very large in size then. And eventually, of course, when we got to Scotland, I was whipped off and taken to a hospital there in Mearnscoke, where they thought that there'd been a huge amount of blood from a burst vessel all round the bone, and that there was a possibility of gangrene and my leg might have to come off. That was the situation. But fortunately, this was not quite as bad as it sounded at that time, and they managed to drain it off the blood, and my leg has been all right ever since. Wasn't very funny at the time, though.
Every time you phoned up, they didn't know whether they were going to cut it off or not, did they?
No.
Can you tell me about the Zenith itself? Was it a brand new destroyer?
Oh, yes, it was. Yes.
So what were the facilities for the crew like on board?
Interesting. The first thing we noticed on going to our mess was that we passed a shower room, a luxury. Now, all the time I was on that ship, that shower was never available to anyone. The water was turned off, because all the good distilled water was for the boilers and not for men to wash with. So all our washing was really done in buckets and things like that. There was a washroom, but I mean, we had to wash our clothes and all that sort of thing. I'd bought an enamel bucket and used salt water, soap and so forth to wash the clothes.
So why provide a shower if it was impossible to use it?
I would say that in peacetime they would only have half the complement on board, because they don't need to keep the guns manned at all times, and therefore, and at half the speed, they wouldn't need the water for the boilers.
What did you think of the provision of the Navy for messing and eating on board the Zenith in 1944?
Well, we had what was known as canteen messing, and I think each man was allowed 1 and 10 pence halfpenny a day, which doesn't sound much, but we did manage. There was about 20 of us in our mess, and we were under the quarter deck. It was very cramped. There wasn't enough room for all hammocks to be hung. So some slept on the table, on the stools, and under the table, and so forth.
Can you tell me if you'd see much of the officers whilst you were in the Navy, and particularly on active service in a destroyer like the Zenith? Or
no,
would you hardly ever see them?
Hardly ever. They had to do their rounds occasionally, of course. When everybody stands to attention, they walk in and walk out again, you know. But apart from that, and on the bridge, when I was on duty on the bridge, they would be there, but they wouldn't speak to me.
What was the attitude of the officers towards the crew, from your own personal experience?
Oh, I think they were behaving the way they'd been trained to behave. They were not without their sense of humour. There was an occasion when we had a young ordinary seaman join our ship at Weymouth on our mess, and it's the first time in his life he'd even seen the sea, let alone been on a ship. Nice new uniform and so forth, and he sat down in our mess, beaming all over his face, and out came a nice brand new pipe, and out came a nice new tin of tobacco, and he was about to fill this tobacco, the pipe with tobacco, when an old stripey on our mess said, excuse me, son, have you got permission to smoke that pipe? Because in the Navy you have to get permission for everything. And no, Chief, no, I haven't, Stripey. Well, he said, you better write out a chit to the officer of the day for permission to smoke that pipe. Put down the make of tobacco, the type of pipe, and pattern number, if any. And this poor kid, he was writing this all out to the officer of the day. And sure enough, the next morning he came up before the officer of the day. And the officer thought this was quite good, you see, so he said, young man, I think I'll put you in captain's report tomorrow. So the next day he had to go before the captain, you see. Everybody had a straight face. The captain read this out very carefully. He said, right, permission granted, providing you go to the chief stoker every time you want to flash up. I mean, you do get that sort of thing that goes on, which is quite funny at times.
What about the petty officers? How did they behave towards...
Oh, they were all right. Yes, we got on with those all right. In fact, they were in the next mess to us, just round the corner.
So you never actually got to Russia?
We never actually arrived. We broke down.
During the whole of the war, I mean?
No.
Was that your only Arctic convoy?
That was the only one. Yes, I ended up in hospital. And when I came out, I found my ship was still there on the Clyde, so I managed to get back to it.
You've put down here that you managed to get to Germany once the war had finished. Can you tell me the circumstances under which that happened, please?
Almost immediately when the war was finished, we sailed through the Kiel Canal, across the North Sea, through the Kiel Canal, and to a place called Travemünde, near Lübeck.
Yes, I know where it is. Thank you.
Yes. I suppose we were just showing the flag. We were tied up alongside a Russian ship. And crowds of people used to stand on the quay and look at us. In some cases, there was bargaining going on, as you can imagine, for cigarettes. Touching. I think the fellows on the lower deck got together and they asked permission to have some of the very young children on board. And they were young. I don't think there was any older than 9 years of age. Because we knew that they could not be held responsible for the war, that they hadn't seen any real decent food for some time. And so we got them on board and we gave them a tea party and we gave them sweets out of our ration, things they'd never seen before. And we got them swinging on the hammocks and riding on the guns and so forth. And we did that for several days, actually. And the children got to know us quite well.
Now, for different parties of children?
Yes, they were, yes. We managed to get hold of a lot of Polish children, as well as German children. We didn't mix them, they don't mix. And it all went very well. They were just like anybody else's children. In fact, they were very well behaved. The strange thing was that when we suddenly got sailing orders and we had to leave, the children knew it before we did. And as the ship left in the morning, the children were all there on the quay, flying flowers onto the ship.
Was that both the German and Polish children?
No, the German. Strangely, we got on better with the German children than we did with the Polish ones. I don't know why, we did our best. But I think we felt that the war was now over. They weren't to blame. And it might do a bit of good.
So what was the real purpose of the visit of the Zenith to Travemünde?
I think mainly to show the flag. I do, honestly. Via that way, yes. And also, we picked up on the way, we picked up some German destroyers, which we took to France. Which we gave to the French.
Did you have anything to do with the adult civilians in Travemünde or the German Kriegsmarine?
Not really, no.
Did the town seem to be badly damaged?
Not Travemünde, no. When we got to Kiel, at the end of the canal, that was severely damaged. It was unbelievable that anyone lived through it. But there seemed to be plenty of people about.
How did you feel towards the German adults at the end of the war? Was there any hatred or hostility on your part?
No. I think if I'd have been one of those soldiers that went to the concentration camps, my feelings might have been different. Nevertheless, as far as I was concerned, the war was over.
Do you feel that your period in the Navy during the war was a bad time for you, or a good time, or a useful time to you, that it contributed to you in any way?
Oh yes, it did contribute, because it certainly widens the horizons. I mean, one mixes with all sorts of men from all walks of life. Some good, some bad, some clever, some not. Yes, you learn an awful lot from it.
Was it easy for you to readjust to civilian life at the end of the war, once you were dismissed from the Navy?
It was a little bit difficult to start with. When I found people moaning about little things that really weren't important. You know, when you're faced with situations which could be life and death, you know what I mean? And then you come back and someone is moaning quite seriously because somebody else hasn't shut the door, you know, always leaves it open. It seems so silly. And it does get a bit niggly. But I soon got over these things, I suppose. I did do, yeah.
Anything particularly that happened to you in the Mediterranean after Germany?
Mediterranean? Only, Malta. Yes, went to Malta, Gibraltar. Yes, it was rather strange, actually. My mother-in-law was involved with this, too. She had a dream that the compass had gone wrong. In actual fact, it had. We got to Malta, Gibraltar, and we were given sailing orders for Malta. But the gyro compass had broken down, which was fair enough. We had a mariner's compass, so off we went. But of course, because of the area with the hills on either side, Africa and so forth, these things affect a gyro, ordinary compass, the magnetisms and so forth. And we were, in fact, 10 degrees out. When this was discovered, the navigator had to work out exactly where we were, and we were in the middle of a minefield. So immediately the captain cleared lower deck, and everybody that could possibly was up on the upper deck. And we went along, I should think, at a speed of about 3 knots. And fortunately managed to get out of the minefield without having a hit.
This was off Gibraltar?
Yes.